Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to ModPath Chat, the official podcast of Modern Pathology, featuring interviews with authors and experts on the latest science, technology, and developments in the field of pathology. Your host, Dr. George Netto, is the editor-in-chief of Modern Pathology and the chair of pathology at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Here's Dr. Netto.
Welcome to another exciting episode of ModPath Chat. Our guest today is Dr. Alexander Meves, Associate Professor of Dermatology at the Mayo Clinic College of Medicine in Minnesota. Dr. Meves' strong translational research interest is focused on skin cancer and specifically melanoma, which is the topic of today's conversation. He is the co-inventor of the Merlin test for melanoma risk stratification. So in a way of disclosure, he will be touching on this test during today's general discussion on risk stratification methods for sentinel lymph node biopsies in general. But again, that test will be touched upon. Thank you, Dr. Meves, for accepting my invitation.
Thank you, George. Thank you for that lovely invitation. I wanted to also say right up front that the Merlin test was developed here at Mayo Clinic, and I have a financial interest in the Merlin test.
What is the the standard of care now in risk stratification decision making? Do you do a sentinel or not when somebody will give you a diagnosis of melanoma, invasive melanoma, on one of your patients?
So I would say that risk stratification itself has not changed that much yet, but there have been several sort of revolutions in melanoma therapy. We have new methods to treat patients with metastatic melanoma. We treat patients earlier. And so there have been a lot of changes that kind of affect the way we manage melanoma patients. And then at the same time, there's also been a push to kind of apply the concepts of precision medicine to melanoma and better individualize care. And I think we're just sort of at the beginning of this process, but it's starting. At the same time, I always think it's important. And when I wrote this article, it was just kind of, it reminded me where we come from when we talk about melanoma, because we come from these dark ages where people presented with melanoma. The idea was to do as much as you can up front to save the patient from metastasis, because once the melanoma metastasized, you know, there was very little that you could do. So the idea was to, you know, in the beginning, to sort of really be aggressive sort of upfront. So we used to do these elective lymph node dissections and then sentinel lymph node biopsy coupled to a completion lymph node dissection. And then really we didn't have many other tools. I mean, surgery was really like the number one tool that we had available. So we gave it to many people and we did it quite aggressively. And I think we're still influenced by that thinking today, because now we have drugs, but now the discussion is almost sort of going in that direction. So who should get adjuvant therapy? Should we give it to everybody right away in an adjuvant fashion? And so I think a lot of people still have this idea that you need to give drugs early and to as many people as you can. But the question is could that paradigm be changing over time? Could it be better maybe to sort of wait till you have a sort of like a molecular relapse of some sort and then just treat those patients? And so you get into this thinking of precision medicine, right? Do we need to really expose everybody to everything right up front, not knowing who actually has high risk disease? Or can we maybe wait and develop new tools and shift that paradigm a little bit?
Very well said. So it's a story in cancer management in general, right? Used to be more is better, now less is better. But as long as it's precise and given to the people who doing less with people who don't need more. So, just to make the treatments you're referring to are immune check inhibitors, and that really revolutionized the outcome and probably started with melanomas before it went to other solid organs. So it's a great story. But the focus today is which is something I didn't realize because I don't do DermPath every day, is that to do sentinel lymph node in and by itself, you know, while it's prognostic but it's not treating anything, it's not even going to improve survival. It's just a local recurrence, right? It's probably delaying, take care of local regional recurrence. Am I correct in understanding that's what you were writing in the paper? So
there's a little bit of debate about the therapeutic value of the sentinel lymph node biopsy itself. Of course, it's a little bit strange because initially that procedure was devised to spare patients these larger procedures. You just like take the sentinel, and if that's positive, you need to cut out more. But now we just do the sentinel lymph node. And we've given up on completion lymph node dissection based on trials that were conducted in 2017, 2018 that showed that get a lot of side effects from this completion lymph node dissection, like lymphedema, but it doesn't really improve survival. So now people don't want to do that procedure anymore. But the sentinel node today is probably mostly used to decide which patient should get, you know, adjuvant therapy and which patient does not need to get adjuvant therapy. So it used to be that only the node positive patients were eligible for, let's say, adjuvant immunotherapy or targeted therapy. But now even that world is shifting a little bit, and that now also the sort of the node negative patients have access to adjuvant immunotherapy, specifically those patients we call stage 2BC disease, which are the thicker primaries.
But currently there's decisions on who to get sentinel or not lymph node biopsy is based on predominantly clinical parameters. And they're starting to have, you know, few gene expressions or more molecular assays or tests that can be solicited to help in that decision. So can you touch upon these two, the clinical and the molecular, and then we'll focus on the combined assay that your group came up with and you propose in that review?
Yeah, so currently the thinking is that if you have a probability of having a nodal metastasis that exceeds 5%, you should consider doing a sentinel lymph node biopsy procedure. And so that roughly equates to having a melanoma of 0.8 millimeter breast depth, or maybe something thinner with ulceration, so T1B melanoma or greater. You would be above that threshold of 5% metastasis risk. And that's how we would select patients for this procedure. We know that certain other variables also kind of influence who has a positive node. Sort of like younger patients, for example, weirdly, more frequently have positive nodes. And if you go to the extreme of things, like if you look at kids with melanoma, they very frequently have positive nodes, but then also their nodal metastasis might be a little bit less meaningful in terms of prognosis and stuff like that. But typically right now, we go by AJCC staging, and we figure like everything that's T1B or higher has a risk of nodal metastasis that exceeds 5%. So we do this procedure. And now the question is, if you apply a molecular tool, and let's say you're dealing with a T1B, T2A, like a type of melanoma that is a little bit above 5% metastasis risk, can you use that risk stratifier, that molecular risk stratifier, and then apply it and then push that sort of metastasis risk to below 5% in a patient that has a sort of like a low risk label attached to its melanoma? So, you know, just using the traditional staging system, the risk would be above 5% because patients T1B or T2A or T2B or something. Then you apply this sort of additional variable of a molecular classifier, and then that would be able to reduce the risk again to below that 5% threshold. So that is sort of like the idea. And so I would take the bragging rights here and say that we were the first to focus on that specific clinical utility of sentinel lymph node biopsy positivity. And we developed this test that we call the Merlin test specifically for that clinical utility. So we didn't develop a test where we would say, oh, high risk of metastasis, but not associated with a specific actionable, you know, sort of utility. And, you know, and then you ask yourself sort of like a prognostic, just general prognostic test. And you ask yourself, yeah, okay, but what's the consequence of that test now? So we specifically sort of developed this test for this question, who should get a sentinel lymph node biopsy and who should not? And then, we took the approach of gene expression profiling and, identified genes that are predictive of that specifically.
We'll come back to the list of genes. And I wanted just to emphasize, so, and you hinted to that. So the idea is because 5% risk or above 5% risk, you end up in the current environment, over 80% of sentinel lymph nodes, even with doing the based on clinical parameters, right? You end up with negative sentinel lymph node resections. So you're trying to bring down that number because these people really didn't have. So yes, it's good that they didn't have, but the procedure, didn't realize that till I read your paper, is almost $20,000 cost procedure. And of course, nothing is harmless to our patients. We even sentinel, despite being limited relatively, it still has some implications on for the patient. So the hoping is the molecular test combined with the clinical variant. And I want to emphasize that the molecular test that you we're going to talk about is not the only. There were other gene expression, right? 31 gene expression and 11 gene expression models, and there are nomograms for the clinical. But you see clearly that there is a room for combining all that, and maybe the Merlin test is one option, right?
Yeah. So common criticism about molecular testing is first of all, you need to realize. Like let's think about these T1A melanomas, right? So these are the ones that have a metastasis risk of less than 5% to the regional lymph node.
And these are less depths, less than 0.8,
yes.
And no ulceration.
Yes. And so for those, we don't do the sentinel lymph node biopsy, right? Why? Because their risk of metastasis is very low. So, but there's still this trade-off that we make, right? So we don't do sentinel lymph node biopsy in all the T1A patients, like we do for the T1Bs, for example, because we're making this trade-off, right? So we're sparing a lot of patients unnecessary surgery, but at the same time, we allow ourselves to have a false negative rate of, or we have a rate of sort of positive nodes that is less than 5%, but there's still sort of like some patients we overlook, right? Because we don't do this procedure on everybody. So when you now do molecular testing on melanomas that are a little bit thicker, you are in for the same trade-off, right? So you stop doing the procedure on everybody. So you will miss some patients who actually do have a positive node, but since you stop doing that procedure on everybody, you will miss those. But on the flip side, you don't have to do that. You save 95% of patients who don't need that procedure. You spare them from having that procedure. So that's sort of like kind of the trade-off we're trying to do for these kind of thicker melanoma patients by applying this molecular test. And we weren't surprisingly, when we were like developing this Merlin test, another company came out called Castle Biosciences, and they developed also a gene expression-based test. And their discovery paper was published in 2015. But they took a kind of like a different approach. and by developing more of sort of like a prognostic test, you know, where you had like a class one and a class two. And if you were a class two, your risk for relapse or your prognostic sort of expectation was kind of reduced. Like you were more likely to develop a relapse or distant metastasis or something like this. So it took more like this prognostic sort of approach. This test was designed for that specific sort of idea. But we were always focused on this question of who should get a sentinel node biopsy or not. And so that's how we kind of differentiated ourselves initially. And of course, then things have evolved a little bit. So for example, now, other companies are also kind of like focusing in on this idea of who should get a sentinel node biopsy or not. But I think we might have an edge because we always specifically designed our model specifically for that utility. There's not been a comparison study done or anything like this. So I can't say for sure. There's also a group out of Germany that is developing risk stratifier for stage two melanoma patients and sort of like trying to apply to this question of who should get adjuvant therapy if node negative patients that are nevertheless having a thicker primary and might benefit from adjuvant therapy, and who should get treatment and who should not get treatment.
Excellent. So you can see a future where at every step of decision making, there is hopefully a molecular assay, molecular diagnostic assay that can be offered and help clinicians decide.
Now, this is a very interesting philosophical question. Or like, this is something that the future will decide is, are we going to decide everything necessarily upfront by, for example, applying a tissue-based classifier to melanomas? Or is the future more sort of like what was reported for colon cancer, where they would get a stage two colon cancer, where they would chemotherapy only to patients who then eventually had a sign of a molecular relapse, and instead of treating everybody upfront, you would wait a little bit. And that's for this question of who should get treatment.
So just to touch briefly on the genes, they're basically related to genes with functionality linked to melanoma invasiveness and metastasis and interaction with T cells. So I see like interleukin-8, melanoma antigen recognized by T cell 1, which is called MLANA, and what have you. So these are the combination gene, and there are 8 genes in this Merlin test. Combine again with the CP, which is the two elements that you mentioned, which are the Breslow thickness and the ulceration. Is that correct?
That's correct. No, it's actually Breslow thickness and patient age.
Patient age, sorry. Mm-hmm. Yes. And which bring us to not all clinical parameters and algorithm are equal, right? So some people include mitotic rate and others don't. Some people include location and histologic type. Can you just to complete the discussion, weigh in on this variability and how is that affecting?
So first of all, it's important to look at your specific outcome of interest, because sentinel lymph node positivity is not exactly the same as distant metastasis, something like this. So if you look at outcomes like relapse, you know, relapse-free survival, like something like this, then mitotic rate might have a heavier weight, but might be more important. But for this question of who presents with a sentinel lymph node biopsy, with a positive sentinel lymph node, mitotic rate was not that strong of a predictor. So that's why it's, for example, not in the classifier. In general, we took this approach of designing many of models just based on these clinical path variables, and we found that in the end, you reach a limit as to where you can go with just using these types of variables, sort of like, you know, this upper limit of performance. And you didn't really need to combine 8-9 different clinical path variables. In the end, just 2 were enough, and everything added didn't increase performance very much. So that's why we ended up with Basso Depths and Patient Age, because everything in addition to that just didn't improve the performance of the model very much. And then we have this this gene expression profile that you just mentioned, where I would say functionally it has a very heavy it has an emphasis on vasculature, because you look at some of these genes, interleukin 8 induces angiogenesis. There's things in there like GDF15, which is sort of like a macrophage inhibitory cytokine, something like this, also involved in driving angiogenesis and vasculature. And integrin beta 3 famously is expressed on vasculature. And so there's sort of a big, heavy component of these types of genes that are measured in the Merlin assay. TGF-beta receptor type 1 is another one. So that's the gene expression profile that we then combine with Basso Depth and Patient Age.
Fascinating. And it's just also a reminder, to other translational researchers in the field, many of them are among the audience, you always identify the question, you decide what exactly I'm trying to achieve, not just to prognosticate, can I help with this specific, and then try to build your classifier. And it doesn't have to be just gene expression. You can, if clinical parameter works, so be it. If proteins work, so be it, as long as you get the best buck for your money, as you say.
This is actually something that the guidelines committees, or the guideline committee, the NCCN, for example, that they require, and which was something that I got alerted to by our statisticians here at Mayo, is that you always have to benchmark the new stuff you create to what's already there. So if you design a gene expression profile, you need to show that it kind of outperforms, the currently used standard clinical path variables. So that's why we always did that. And all our complications, we benchmark, our combined models to just the clinical path models. I also wanted to brag that a lot of the genes in the Merlin gene expression profile have actually been targeted by pharma. So pharmaceutical companies have targeted interleukin 8 and combined it with PD-1 for melanoma patients, and there's an added effect. So it looks like a promising therapy too. People have gone after this protein called GDF15, which is part of the Merlin test, and that seems to be that's in clinical trials right now. So we'll see. So it's not just sort of a bunch of random genes that we assay, but we do believe that they have some functional relevance for actually driving metastasis.
That's important. And just out of curiosity, the assay reports each of these genes, or you just give a score? Because I know it's a commercial assay now, or is that, how does it work?
So the reporting is sort of, you get like a binarized reporting. You get a low risk label or a high risk label. And if you have a low risk label, it means that your risk of having a positive sentinel node is less than 5%, and therefore you can forgo sentinel lymph node biopsy. If you're high risk, you're above that 5% threshold, and you should consider sentinel lymph node biopsy.
So you don't report everything under the hood. So, which is finally a philosophical question, because these issues are very important for us molecular pathologists and as we develop laboratory-developed testing. So, for example, in Mayo now, if Mayo Lab is amazing, if they develop a, can they develop a laboratory test, if they develop a predictor, I guess what I'm saying, is it all going to become just commercialized testing, and we can't improve upon or try to develop cheaper or academic based testing for these things?
So my hope is that actually these tests will become available as sort of like point of care tests, where everybody can sort of run them in their own clinical labs. In fact, this company that is commercializing the Merlin test is working on with another company called BioCardis, who are selling this Adilla platform. Yeah. So, the idea is to, develop a cartridge where you could just like pop in the paraffin tissue, and then it would, you could run the test in your own lab. So you wouldn't have to send it out to some other person's lab.
I like that. That's great, because
and it, I wanted
it
to
combines
be
both. In one hand, it has the, you know, there is a lot of advantages to kits and commercialized tests because consistency and performance. But if you make it toward, we can bring it back to the hospital and everybody have access to it.
Yeah.
And that's the IDLA system is, I think, that you're referring to.
Yeah.
It's perfect for that. And you can then keep adding cartridges to different tests and it empowers both.
It's incredible. Like, that was always my dream when I was in the research lab, kind of like you're doing the extraction of RNA and just like doing these thousand steps. And now you just like pop it into a machine. It's all automated.
And then shave a few shaves of paraffin and just even my fellow who wasn't molecularly trained ran a lot of assays for MSI, I think, on prostate for this. That tells you how easy and how well better. Well, Alex, it was a very enjoyable conversation and very inspiring to a lot of young translational scientists and translational pathologists and molecular pathologists who are in the audience. And hopefully some of them will be the next discoverer of such tests that will help us all, both clinicians and pathologists.
It's been a great journey, and if you have a chance to do any type of research, do it, because it's fun. I really enjoyed the whole trip here, so the whole discovery work and everything.
And very impactful. Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any opinions expressed in this podcast are the speaker's own and do not represent the views of Modern Pathology, Springer Nature, UAB, or USCAP. Your ModPath Chat host and scientific director is Dr. George Netto. Producers are Christina Crow, Amber Jackson, Dr. Sarah Jang, and Dr. Catherine Ketchum. Technical direction is provided by Kaminsky Productions, music by Mitch Neubauer. Thanks to the authors, reviewers, and editors of Modern Pathology for making this podcast possible.